Thank you, Neil. Let's start with questions from the panel. Wendy.
Okay, you've touched on my favorite topic is the data definitions, and I, both in the voting systems, I'm, you know, adamant that those need to be developed. It doesn't seem like it would be that hard. I am guessing the way names are being entered are probably the same between your systems and addresses. I'm guessing probably the dates of birth maybe, or dates of registration maybe, you know, that's probably the only variance that may occur. Is there any way we can quickly get you vendors together to try and come up with a common standard for just those data elements that are used in duplicate matching? The name, date of birth, the four-digit social security number, those pieces to ease the movement between states.
Do I agree with you? Yes, I do. But of the 13 states that we support, each of those states prescribed how they wanted those dates. Some used month, month, day, day, year, 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 year. Some used just year, year. So even within the states that we support, we relied on that state to prescribe to us what they were looking for. Do I agree with you? Yes, it would be wonderful if we could all get together and develop a standard. Absolutely.
I mean, it can be, in this present example of date format, is that you could specify within the actual technical aspect of the data format standard that date is acceptable in one of four formats. You know, so, I mean, the problem you start running into is that the standard starts growing and growing, because where do you cut that off? I mean, one of the areas that I would be greatly concerned about is on addresses. I mean, you see addresses in just about every form, all the way down to, you know, parcel descriptions. So, you know, at some point, some discipline is required and some compromise in order to maintain a reasonable definition of the data format. Otherwise, you end up with what you have today.
Herb.
Yeah, Tom, you said that the different states that you were working with, they all had a variety of different matching criteria. Okay, and presumably, Neil, you found the same thing. Can you comment on how much effort it is to change matching criteria? And is it a huge effort to do? Is it a relatively small matter of programming? You know, can you characterize the scale of the effort needed?
A relatively small matter of programming, and Herb, I should have explained more clearly, is the defaulted format in the matching criteria is first name, last name, date of birth. In some of our states, the state administrator wanted the ability to select an alternative criteria, and then within that alternative criteria, select what other additional criteria they wanted for that matching. So the ability to either just default to the standardized criteria or make a change to that for additional matching criteria. So very simple process.
Simple process that can be done and debugged in, you know, a matter of weeks. It's weeks, not years.
It would be days, not weeks.
Excellent. Okay. Neil, same for you.
Yeah, hours, but the regression testing may take forever.
Governor Walker.
How many vendors are we talking about, and how many states themselves across?
Well, there's two right here.
And, of course, Sabre is the leading vendor across the United States. But there are probably you knew that this was going to happen, right? there are probably supporting vendors across the 50 states. There are probably 8 or 10.
I think that might be high now. But
you think they would all agree with you that it would be an easy process to implement the standard? I'm speaking of vendors now.
Yeah, one of the challenges, though, about addressing this is asking us to do it.
Oh, where did that to come from?
I'm just looking at it as an option.
Yeah, I mean, one of the ways to make this happen is for the state to require it. If the state were to say, and we saw a lot of statewide RFPs that mentioned an XML format in their RFP responses and their RFP solicitations. And I'm not familiar with how much this was followed up when they finally implemented it, but there was a requirement in many of the RFPs to do this. And, you know, the challenge is that by asking us to sit down and have a beer and come up with what the date format is, well, we'll probably do that, but for us to do it in a vacuum like that is, you know, it's, I don't know what kind of legs it's going to get. I mean, I've been promoting a data standard for this and for election equipment for 5-6 years now. And, you know, it's still, I don't know, maybe it's because it's coming from an evil vendor that doesn't get any legs. But the reality is that the state, the county officials, I mean, as officials, we need to recognize the value of this and implement it at that level. I mean, because we can agree all we want on it, but till it's codified or made an administrative rule, it's just not going to go anywhere. Yeah.
That's correct, but the directive would have to come from our supported states to us. And obviously our supported states are overseen by the chief election official of that state, whether it be the Secretary of State, a Board of Elections, Lieutenant Governor, so on and so forth.
Right. I mean, we've been trying to do grassroots kind of efforts with this through the IEEE standards organization and some other, you know, ad hoc kind of pieces, but you know, until states start adopting it or trade organizations start making it a priority, you know, we don't really have the ability to push it forward.
Fran.
My question is somewhat related to that, and you don't have to answer this question if you don't feel comfortable. Like, if you could change something in HAVA, I mean, if you had the power to amend HAVA, that might relate to either setting a different national standard, whether it is for voter identification or standards for how to allow state databases to talk to each other. What would those changes be?
I would say that HAVA should have required a data standard. And I would also state that HAVA spell out what was required to be entered to identify a voter. So it's across the states, states do not maintain the same information that goes in to identify a voter. So some require last four digits of Social Security, some states don't. And the variations continue. Probably close to, you know, all 50 states, there's variations. So there's no consistency between how voters identified or what constitutes a match, if you want to take it one level more.
Expand on that. In as much as I do believe that there should be a data standard, I would not want to leave that decision up to Congress. but a data standard, yes. What I think the and again I went over it in my presentation, but the next logical step when HAVA was introduced and then ultimately implemented, it was to develop a centralized voter registration system in each state. HAVA did not prescribe what happened after each state developed that centralized system. Here we are talking about the ability now for interoperability and the ability to exchange data state to state. HAVA does not address that. It would be nice if HAVA did address what happens next.
Michael Alvarez.
Well, I'm actually looking at the VVSG recommendations that are pending at the EAC. And they do have a lot of discussion in them about common data formats for voting systems as they define them in the VVSG, which does, as far as I can tell, excludes statewide voter registration files. So I kind of have a two-pronged question. One is, I know, Neil, you're going to be upset because they don't actually recommend EDX, but have you had a chance to look at the information in the VVSG about common data formats and data exchange requirements? If so, any comments on that? But the other prong of this is, should voter registration data systems fall under standards like the VVSG? Should they be something that should be in the VVSG? Should this be something that the EAC should pursue?
Can I not answer his question? So I have seen the reference to data standards in the VVSG, and I don't care what standard is implemented. So I believe they're making reference to the EML OASIS version. I personally, my opinion is that it's not the right standard for us in this country. But I will tell you, as we have a converter from our XML standard to the EML, so I really don't care. The fact that one exists is really the point. Now, if one can be harder and more difficult to implement, sure, but it's certainly going to be an improvement for where none exists today. I think that the voting system standards as they exist at over 500 pages should not have anything more added to them. You know, if the EAC is going to get into doing standards for voter registration, I mean, I think if you look at it from a system standpoint, while there is data flow and communication between the two, I believe separate treatment is warranted if they're going to get into that. So I think, you know, number one, I think the voting system standards have gotten very complex and very large, and I don't think we should be adding that in there as they would get lost, I would say, one or the other. And so if the EAC were to get in, my recommendation would be do it under a separate cover.
Madam Chair, we're up against our deadline of 11:15, and I know I have one more panel member with a question. We haven't allowed for any questions from the floor yet, so. Okay, Paula Hoffler.
Okay, quickly, let's talk about audit trails. We've had quite a discussion about audit trails and the need for audit trails and the need for not just that there be an audit trail, but that you be able to provide that information to people easily so that they can tell. So let's just take this example of the 3,700 missing voters from the previous session. What would happen in your systems if you had 3,700 missing voters and you didn't know why they were missing?
Our systems, if in the case that a voter is moved anywhere, they never leave the system. Even if they're purged, they go into an archival database. So they're never taken out of the system. In addition to that, the systems provide for a complete audit log. What happened to that voter, at what date, and who did it? So the system does provide for an audit log that can be accessed by a database administrator and not have the ability to be deleted.
My response would be, how did they go missing, first of all? So there's different avenues where 3,700 people can disappear. Wow, that kind of opens it up. But as Tom mentioned, in our system, if you delete something, it never really goes away. You just don't see it from the surface anymore, and there's audit trails. And certainly, you know, it's really dependent on the type of transaction of what was involved with those 3,700. So I couldn't tell you what really would happen, but I can assure you there's multiple pathways to recover.
But I think we both agree that in the case that anybody tries to cancel, purge, whatever term you use, a particular voter, it doesn't go away. It goes into an archival database. That can't necessarily be retrieved in some cases, but it's there to see what happened through the audit log process.
Okay, questions from the floor.
Paul Miller, Washington State. Having done quite a bit of work in Washington, within the 3.4 million voters in Washington State of matching, I've come to the conclusion that the data that you use to match is fairly public, but in order to decide whether in fact those two match records represent the same voter, the signature is imperative as a piece of information, but it's the most sensitive information that we have in our databases. And so I was wondering if you'd done any thought about how to do a, you know, can I don't understand how you can remove a voter based on simply on the matching information. So, but how do you move the signature information around? Have you given any thought to that?
Well, and interestingly enough, Paul, not all states require signature.
I'm aware of that, but it makes me wonder how they can.
New England states, there's no signature on the New England states. We also found that in matching criteria, when you bring up the two signatures, people's signatures, in as much as they might remain similar, my signature when I registered to vote at 18 is much different than my signature today. What we, during training sessions, what we bring down to the local level is you are not handwriting experts. If you are, and in some cases, some of our states said where we have matching criteria where you can potentially merge two voter records together into one, the ability to have three options, not a match, yes a match, and unable to determine. Because the local election official, and I was a local election official at one point, are not handwriting experts, they're not matching criteria experts, they're local election officials who don't get paid very much and have a heavy workload during peak seasons. It's a hard question to answer.
If it's not obvious, it requires investigation. So if the information that you have in front of you, it's not an obvious match, or, I mean, you have to pull it out of the system and go investigate it. I mean, that there's no way around it yet, because it's a social problem, right?
What we do find is that centralized systems and potentially matching duplicates has opened communication between county election officials. Local election officials are now actually communicating with each other, where before it used to be sending paper back and forth. Now they actually have to pick up the phone and talk to each other. It's a good thing.
Last question from Commissioner Rodriguez.
Thank you, and I take a quick opportunity just to thank everyone for their time. I cut a trip short to come back, and I'm very glad that I did. I'm very grateful for the discussion of the past 2 days. I'm not sure in the evolution of HAVA is exactly as you characterize it, sir. And I'm concerned about the whole idea of a national system, even as a HAVA commissioner, and think that HAVA was a step, certainly the first time, that there was some federalization of some of these standards. But I do think, having been around the country a little bit in the last 8 months, that there are a lot of folks who really want to preserve the local control that they believe is their constitutional right. And so I just am curious, have you had indications from Congress about a national voter registration system? Beyond the NVRA?
When I look around the room, I see some of my former election official colleagues who are around during the discussions that Congress had prior to the passage of HAVA, and a lot of us sat in on some of those discussions. And Congress did talk about the ability to match voters state to state way back when. Now, of course, the ultimate decision was before we get there, let's get these states on a centralized system first. And again, they didn't determine at that point what was going to be the next step, what was going to evolve after every state was on a centralized system. So there were discussions back prior to the passage of HAVA with Congress about the ability to exchange data state to state. Additionally, you heard from Mike Stewart from the state of Kansas. They're exchanging data within their Midwest, around the Kansas area. They're exchanging data on a voluntary basis. I also understand that there's a Southern States Coalition who are exchanging. Right. So, and I commend those states for volunteering to do, to conduct a duplicate voter exchange because they see a need for it. If your election officials see a need for it, I think it should be a consideration nationally. Now, the last thing I want to comment on is absolutely the local election officials should have the final decision as to what happens with that voter because they know that voter. And having been a county official in the past, when you go out into those counties, and we did do a lot of county visits, they tend to know their people who have that have lived in that area. They know the voters. They know whose kids went to college. We were in rural areas where they knew, those are the people, they live after the road turns to dirt before, you know, not on the paved section, or, you know, they tend to know their voters. Or if they don't know their voters, they've got the ability to go to their assessor, their tax collector, to find out more information about that voter. So absolutely, the control should remain at the local level. But the facility to have that control has to be given to that local election official by a statewide database or an exchange between county to county or state to state. So it's got to come from the top, controlled at the bottom.
All right.
And I'm not necessarily advocating for national database. I'm saying that if we're even thinking about it, we better get a standard in place because we're running the risk of creating a bigger mess if we don't react with a standard to have in place to enable that possibility.
I think I remember actually a version of HAVA that had a section in it that said that all the systems had to be interoperable. And, you know, you had to pick. And the reason I remember that is they had to pick me up off the floor after I read it. how are they going to do that? All right. Thank you very much to both Neil and Tom. Thank you for your insights. And thank you, everybody, for coming.
Let me just second that. Thank you to all of you, especially the committee. We especially want to thank the commissioners that have been here. We appreciate their support and interest. And to you, the public, we want to thank you for being here 2 days. Today isn't as long, but we thank you for your interest. The interim report, we hope, will be on the website starting April 1st. That's the time when it's got to be out, reviewed, commented to, and then on the internet April 1st, so it'll be available to all of you. The committee, if you would go into the boardroom. Are there any other?
Through those doors over there.
Oh, through.
Yeah, there are doors over there. You can just walk through.
Right there.
That's
okay.
Right. That's right. The secret passage over there. That's right.
Thank you.